Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Coaches Network, bringing the game together.
Hey guys, you're now listening to the Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy.
All right, welcome everyone in the room. We're here for a live edition of the Coaches Network podcast. I'm joined by my guests today. I'll let them introduce themselves. Jack, you want to start us off?
Good evening. Jacques Edouard. Love football. Been involved in football from an early age, from playing, and then into later on into coaching. Been lucky enough to work in recreational football, development football, and professional football, senior. Youth development and foundation phase. Currently an academy manager of a football and education full-time program for 16 to 19 year olds. And I'm sure we'll dive into the rest, especially when we're chatting about coach education. So no, thanks for having me, Yas. And looking forward to it.
Awesome, good stuff. I know Joel will be with us shortly, but Apps, you want to go?
My name's Apple Westcott. Obviously, there's enough of you here know who my ugly face is. I'm a YD lead coach, MK Dons, ex-player, ex-all kinds of things. I'm a dad, I'm enthusiastic about football, obviously, and here we are.
Awesome. Joe, I'm not sure if you're ready to go or just give a brief intro.
I'm in a car with people, so come back to me. Sorry.
No worries, man. Just let us know when you're ready. And for anyone that doesn't know, my name's Coach Yas. Currently host and founder of the Coaches Network podcast. A range of experiences similar to the guys working across youth development and senior football. And we're here this evening just to discuss this concept of coach education courses, whether they're still relevant, what our experiences are with them. And how maybe they need to be reshaped, if at all, in the future. I'll open the floor, Jacques. I don't know if you want to just start us off from your perspective, what your thoughts are on the current coach education pathway. Maybe just give a brief insight to what your pathway has been like.
Appreciate going up first. My coaching pathway started year 12, year 13 at school, where I did the YSC, so it's like Youth Sports Leadership Award, coaching in local primary schools to my school, and then that led to kind of being a facilitator / a young leader at multi-sports camps at Middlesex University, and it kind of grew into there, really, grew from there. When I started my football coach development with the FA, there was the five courses, 1, 2, UEFA B, UEFA A, and Pro. You're safeguarding the first aid bits, and that was it, really. So the A license and the Pro license were the pedestal for me, and was always the goal once I started coaching. And then obviously as I've continued down the pathway, the prerequisites for clubs kind of grew with the courses. So the introduction of the youth modules or the FA Youth Award, then going a little bit further, I personally went down the goalkeeping route as well, So I did my level 2 goalkeeping, as well as the UEFA B, a level 3 FA goalkeeping coaching course. It was funny. I was talking earlier about, you know, just a little bit of prep and having a chat about coach education and how it's changed, and it's gone very specific. So I'll leave it there and we'll jump in whilst Lily wants to jump us on stage.
Nah, cheers for that. Cheers for that, Jack. Apps, what are your thoughts, man? What's your journey been like? What's the experience been like for you? You know, and obviously, you know, there's been a lot of changes over the years with the coach education pathway, and I know you're still working hard towards some of your qualifications.
Yeah, do you know what? It's an interesting one because when I first started coaching, which seems like a completely different lifetime now. I was 14 years old. Coaching a girls team for a local San Diego girls team, who were very good, by the way, and it was just me finding passion for something. I didn't know anything about coaching courses, safeguarding, any of that kind of stuff. Probably getting people in trouble now, but I didn't know anything about any of that kind of stuff. Didn't know about coaches' pathways. All I knew was about what I had experienced as a player, the things that I was experiencing, shall I say, as a player, and I just kind of used to replicate that. When coaching started to get a little bit more serious for me in terms of me understanding the process to teaching, I was probably about 18, 19 years old, so similar to Jack. About 18, 19 years old, I was a scholar myself at that time, and I would say that the coaches' education programs that I've been a part of, even right up to now, if I'm completely honest, I don't think they're fit for purpose. I think the way that the courses used to be done were perhaps a little closer to the mark. But here's the thing with our industry, and I say our because football belongs to everybody. Our football industry has been so dominated by money making or money makers that it's, you know, the game lost its soul a long time ago. And wherever we look in the game, you always find someone's trying to capitalize. Apologies, little man is going doogie over the Man United game. Wherever you look in football, there's always someone trying to capitalise. And in this instance, it's actually the FA. The FA are trying to capitalise. And don't get me wrong, I understand how difficult it must be to write a course that everybody can be a part of because football belongs to the people. We've kind of taken that elite edge away from our coaching courses. I would say that the qualifying criteria to get onto some of these courses has lowered so much so that we're seeing people coach that perhaps shouldn't be. And I think I've been involved in some fantastic discussions with a good friend of mine, Carlan. Recently, we were talking about characteristics of personality traits of coaches and how some people. Our coaches and perhaps shouldn't be at, sort of beyond a certain level because they lack certain personality traits and whatnot. And I think that's kind of really what we're seeing more now. It's kind of, you know, the floodgates are kind of open. They've lowered the bar so much that any Tom, Dick and Harry, which isn't a terrible thing, but now, unfortunately, if you have this piece of paper, it now says that you've got the same qualification as somebody that's been coaching for 25 years. Now, me, for instance, I've been coaching 20 years. This is my 20th year going into 21 years of coaching. And I can be sat in a room. Now, this is no disrespect to someone who's 18 years old. You know, forgive me. But at 18 years old, you can go and get a UEFA B qualification and then technically go and lead an academy side or be a YB phase lead coach even. And then you'll have somebody like me who's got a UEFA B, and then all of a sudden it's like, how are you on that same level? Does that make sense? So it's just like, how is that possible? So even now, going into the A license, it's like I can look at other guys that also have the A license, but they've been coaching for 3 years. You say to yourself, well, where's the prestige? Now, some people can be just good coaches. They can be good with the delivery. Other people, maybe a lack of experience. Maybe they don't really understand how the game is played. They've never actually played. So now you have to look at the courses themselves and the qualifying criteria and the types of people that will allow them to go in the courses. And I think we're trying to make the game inclusive. But I think I'm not going to be careful with what I say because and some of you know that I don't care about offending people, but I think we've become too inclusive with a lot of the education aspects. We're almost forcing it. People that don't actually have the right personality traits, we're trying to push people over the line, and then we wonder why we're not competing at certain levels when it comes to developing players and the types of players that we develop. And we wonder why in the continent they do so much better than us, because the education program is so much better. But yeah, and then listen, I've rambled on for a long time there, but that's just my opinion on it. And anyone else that wants to challenge me, let's go.
No, I love that. You know, don't worry about the ramble. I think that's what we're here for, and it's just to kind of share some views and perspectives and opinions. You know, I think you make a couple good points there. You know, it is probably difficult to write a single course, if you like, for a collective amount of people with a different range of experiences and different working in different contexts. So that kind of brings me to my first question, you know, and obviously, Joe, when you're ready, let me know, innit? But the first question is, I guess, do you think they made a mistake when they kind of amalgamated the two pathways from where they had the youth award pathway and then the core coaching pathway? So obviously, for those that don't know, back in 2000 or pre-2016, there was two, I guess, yeah, coach development pathways, coach education pathways, in that you had the youth award, which was kind of really focused around developing environments and, you know, supporting coaches and becoming better age-specific coaches at the younger ages within youth football, whereas the traditional coaching pathway, your FA level 1-2 right through to UEFA B and A license, was traditionally seen as a pathway to more senior level coaching and a much more heavily technical focused qualification. So I don't know who wants to kind of go up first on that one.
Jack, do you want
to
go?
So I was trying to unclick the mic. where I'm in the car, I'm trying to be careful. This is a yes and a no. I think it's definitely a positive thing that they branched out to target the difference between coaching youth football and coaching senior football, because I think where individuals had a preference on how to coach senior football, they were taking that into the youth game. And, you know, we're seeing byproducts of that yesterday, last week, last month. Now, so I think it was a great idea to do that, to separate the pathway. But then what they started to do as prerequisites for the jobs or for anything in the professional game, you needed both or one of, or so no one was really clear on where it would take you if you were going to add this additional belt. So I was in grassroots football at the time. I was at a youth club, youth grass charter standard. You needed, your youth awards would support the club's application to charter standard football. And it was, as part of our job role to attend the youth awards. Probably some of the best, the best courses, course that I attended. I don't know if that was the actual tutor leading the course. I think predominantly more that than the content, but the content was thought-provoking at the time and the environment that I was in. So I think it was a good thing, especially for coach education. But then I don't... Where I don't think they've followed it up with is where they've gone, obviously, into the foundation phase, advanced youth awards for youth, YD, pro dev, the older age groups or through the age groups in the academy system. I don't understand why they just don't name it the same in the grassroots level. And then
you know, then you can know where you, as a coach, you know where you're kind of going, and you can see your journey in front of you. Right, so I need to do my level two or my foundation phase youth award, which allows me to work within the foundation phase grassroots or academy. So it's the same picture across the board, and all the way through. That's my initial thoughts. I'm bumbling. I don't want to ramble because there's more upstairs. I'll pass the baton on and come back with a little bit more in a sec.
Yeah, go on, Naps. I think you had your mic ready, wouldn't you?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say to Jack, you know, he made some interesting points and he kind of stirred the pot a little bit. Jack, are you suggesting that potentially there should be separate awards for pro coaching and grassroots coaching?
Yes, there I am. I think there's a clear difference between recreational and development football and professional environment football. You know, if you want to go for a job in an academy for, you know, YD, a lead or phase lead, whichever category, I know attached to it now is the Advanced Youth Awards and the A-specific Advanced Youth Awards. So, and they are, you know, nice to have or essentials, probably essentials for the majority of clubs for the season ahead. So that's one way of doing it. But as you know, you're talking about experience. Is there an experience gap on as a prerequisite to go on one of those Advanced Youth Awards? Don't see why not. There's prerequisites that you have to work in 11v11. Stir the little pot a little bit more. I think 2/3 of the individuals on my UEFA A course that I had the pleasure of going to St. George's Park for, still a candidate, haven't passed the programme yet. You know, they're in the foundation phase, but it's not 11v11, but, you know, is that, well, how comes you're on the course if you're only working with 7v7 or 5v5? So I think it's the same thing as that. I don't know. What do you think?
Do you know what? Let me jump in on that one quick. Apps, I think there definitely should be two pathways. I know certainly in the last couple of years that, you know, delivering coach education myself and having a discussion with a range of different people, that I think at UEFA B, I think the UEFA B should still be open to grassroots, but I think there should be a different element. Similar to how, you know, when you're, if you are an ex-pro maybe, you've got the UEFA B that you do with the PFA. It's not structured in the same way as the, you know, the public one, if you like. So I think that's just something to kind of think about. Secondly, beyond that, in the, you know, Jacques, you made some good points there in that, you know, in the elite pathway and the recreation pathways, you know, two very different environments. I think where they could maybe further develop it, I think potentially bring back an element of what maybe the youth award was and have that as, which it was then, to be fair, when you got up to module 3 and you got you signed off at the youth award, you were, you know, you were equivalent to a UEFA B at that level. It was a level 3 qualification essentially. I think with the Advanced Youth Award, you know, I've had the pleasure of obviously being able to do that qualification myself, and for me, I certainly feel that on that course it was very tailored to the age group that you want to work with. Now the problem you have with something like the Advanced Youth Award, unfortunately, is because it's become a recent qualification where a lot of academies are asking for coaches to have those qualifications. It doesn't necessarily specify all the time either whether it should be a specific phase. So if you're a foundation phase coach, as an example, or better yet, you're a youth development phase coach, but there's an opportunity for you to go on foundation phase Advanced Youth Award. If you're able to get on it and tick that box, there's nothing to say later down the line that, you know, you can't work with the youth development phase or whatnot. Because when you're actually assessed, and I'm sure you know you guys are maybe going to go through this very soon, both with your A licenses and maybe hopefully beyond, you'll find that at the end of the day you're going to get assessed based on the group that you're working with. So you may get ticked off and your certificate may say, you know, Advanced Youth Award for the foundation phase, but actually your whole assessment process, or you know, your case study is built around a youth development phase age group, because you might have moved age groups while you were doing the course, if that makes sense. On the point of obviously the A license being applicable for the foundation phase, it's always been a topic of discussion, and I think where maybe the ECCC could kind of come in and reshape things is almost say that actually it's probably more important to have a B license and then maybe an age-specific advanced youth award, as opposed to have an A license and then have a desirable advanced youth award, if that makes sense. But you know, that's just a couple of things off the back of what Jack said, but it'll be interesting to see what you've
used. It ties into what Abs was saying about, you know, sorry, if we're going to stir the pot, let's do it properly, that the ECCC is supporting the FA on monetizing courses. What was the last, I don't know how much the last Wraith Ray course was. It was four and a half grand. Five and a half grand. You know, and you get to stay at the Hilton. I mean, but I know friends of mine that are in the audience, haven't seen their faces, they've been doing it virtually, so I don't know if there's been a discount because it's virtual, and obviously you don't pay for that.
To be fair, you used to get a t-shirt. They took that element out. They said, no, we're not putting that in anymore. You're still paying full price though. But to be fair, the course has been restructured over the last couple of years. I know that certainly pre-2017, I think when I did mine, I think mine was like the first course that kind of got restructured and was assessed in the way it currently is. In other words, not having a final assessment. It's not you do your 2 weeks, you go there, you know, at the end of your 2 weeks and you deliver a final assessment. My course was like the first one where they really piloted this idea of an ongoing assessment, if you like. But I think the process itself, I think it's definitely beneficial. And I've got two kind of thoughts on it. One, with the pathway the way it is, I think certainly what you'll get is more specialist, if you like, coaches working in different age groups and different environments. I think the challenge you have with it is because of the way it's now been assessed, and this is probably where, coming back to what you were saying, Apple, that, you know, the quality of the standard may not be as what it once was, is that technically I think there's a lot less emphasis on it. There's a lot less of a spotlight on the technical information that goes into the sessions. Therefore, you know, it kind of then, where you've got this assessment process that kind of is deemed competent or not based on your technical information, and people were complaining that, well, it's too subjective because it's down to the tutor and what they think and what boxes you can tick for them. It kind of still is the same, but you're maybe just being assessed on different areas rather than the technical information. And I feel like the challenge we have now, especially when you're now looking at elite players in elite environments, coaches coming through may not necessarily have that same depth of knowledge. Not to say that you can just grab that off a course and you're good to go, but I think there's much more onus and emphasis now for the coaches to go out and do their own research and do their own study of this technical aspect of the game, if you like.
And this is where I think there's a problem, because I think what this is just my take on it. And yes, you'll know a little bit better. You're an educator yourself, and I'm sure there's a few educators in the room. What we see now more on coaching courses is process. They teach process. They don't teach detail. And this is the reason why, sorry to sort of go into a bit of a side topic here, but and this is why I also think that at least if that's how they're going to do things, they have to start regulating the one-to-one coaching industry, and there has to be detail-focused, detail-related courses for those specific elements. And I'm sure there's some people that are in the audience that do one-to-one coaching, and they'll be having fits, you know, because they might think that it's not necessary. But you have to remember that not everybody is as good at one-to-one coaching as you might be, and they don't understand what one-to-one coaching is supposed to be. So, you know, it's about recreating pictures from games and either strengthening strengths or strengthening weaknesses, or it's about improving fitness and certain elements. And one of the things that really bothers me is when I see someone, and it bothers me for one reason, but I'm not going to get into that just yet.
Get into
one
it.
One of the things trust me, listen, yes, you know I'll go, mate. One of the things that bothers me is if I see perhaps someone who's got a level 2 badge, and they are coaching a professional football player. Now, my question is, how is that possible? What gives you the right to go over the guys that have done the study and done the experience because you know someone, and then you have a look at what they're what they're doing in the one-to-one session, and you think to yourself, this is scandalous, and I'm seeing people charging obscene amounts of money. Now, listen, I don't come from anything. You know, I come from nothing. So I respect anyone's hustle, but there has to be quality attached to your product.
100%. But I think, you know, there's a couple of things there, Apps. Firstly, you're right. There is a, and I think this whole pandemic situation is kind of just you know, completely blown the market out in terms of how many one-to-one coaches there are. You know, everyone's still trying to make an income, if you like. But I think the problem is, especially when it comes to younger players, youth players, it's very easy for coaches who do the one-to-one stuff to kind of pull the wool over a parent's eye and make them assume that what they're doing is good for the player, if you like. I think there definitely could be some more regulation on that. But the other key part is, and I think this is where maybe the FA need to kind of maybe think about it and probably address it quite quickly. In 2011, obviously, brought in the Licensed Coaches Club, which is obviously going to try and monitor and, if you like, regulate some of the coaches and their qualifications to ensure they were doing CPD. Because, you know, at that point, you could have had a level one for 15 years. You could have been coaching kids in Cressenden Park like you were at the age of 16. And, you know, no one would be able to tell you that you're not qualified. Now, obviously, you know, off the back of the pandemic, they scrapped their Licensed Coaches Club. So it'll be interesting to see what they do going forward now to kind of monitor and assess whether people are staying up to date or in date with some sort of CPD. I know that there's talks. I don't know anything official, but with the UEFA B and UEFA A license qualifications, you need to uphold a certain amount of hours now, and it needs to be evidenced. Otherwise, your qualification becomes invalidated. So it'll be interesting to see what happens on that front. But it's interesting, you know, if we come back to the actual coach education piece now, do you think that the courses as they are now are serving a purpose for the environments to kind of cater to?
It's a one-size-fits-all. It's two one-size-fits-all. Because, look, when you walk into a classroom, you've got... I'm not going to blow my own trumpet, but I know football. And I'll stand my own in the room with some of the best. I know that. So you walk into a room and there are some very talented coaches, and then there are guys that you wouldn't trust your three-year-old with, you know, and it's just that there's no consistency, there's no continuity of quality. And, you know, it's like you've got X amount of people who are actually good at what they do, and look, passion is great. Everyone should have passion, and you should be encouraged to follow your passion. But there's at no point should somebody of a certain level be sitting in the same classroom as somebody of another level. That just shouldn't happen. But there's a reason for it, not because I'm an elitist or I want there to be this great divide or separation. No, not at all. Football should be inclusive, but we also have to understand that when there's an application process, we need to refine the application process. So when we run a course, we can say, okay, this particular course is going to be for that batch of people because they are from a semi-professional playing background or a professional playing background, or they've done A, B and C. Because bear in mind that not everybody that has got their B and A license has been a professional footballer. Doesn't mean to say they're going to be a bad coach. So therefore, we have to improve our application process. Unfortunately, the reason why there's so many issues with the courses is because they want it to be all-inclusive, because it's a business. It's the FA's biggest business, other than cards and fines. It's courses, which is, you know, and this is why I find it quite scandalous, in the sense that some people will go and do their advanced youth award, you know, or some people have a choice between either their A license or their advanced youth award, because how much it costs is just obscene. Now, you could do your advanced youth award and then get a nudge to go upstairs and play with it and coach with the seniors. Now you've got to go and do your A license. That's another $5,500. Instead, what we should be doing, if the FA were really, really about educating and about developing, they would say, okay, if you've got your B license, let's say it's assessed for foundation phase, we will start to run bolt-on courses or upskilled courses or conversion courses for those that have that qualification and now want to move into wider and senior football. Now, that way, you're not going to spend $5,500. We're going to make it more attainable or more obtainable for the coach, more affordable, and we'll say, okay, well, rather than charge you X amount, we'll just make this a bolt-on course or an upskill course, and that will take away the cost and you'll end up with the same qualification. But no, we don't do that, and that's because it's a business. So once football gets its head out of its own ass and we actually start making it make sense, I think we'll start seeing real genuine improvements. And that's the reason why this country is so far behind with its coach development and its coach education. If you go to Holland, it's different. It's so different. Their tactical understanding and technical knowledge is, I mean, if you look at their level two, their level one course, makes our UEFA B look average. Not in the sense that the information is so in depth, but they're teaching you about things that, you know, that they should be seeing from football players. We shouldn't be watching a game of football, professional football, in we'll talk about League One and League Two. We shouldn't be watching League One and League Two, and we're watching guys that can't receive a ball in a half turn. We shouldn't be seeing that. But yeah, they're there because they're fantastic athletes and they're playing desire. That's why England will not win a World Cup. So, you know, or even a European Championship. So, until we improve our coaching, we cannot improve our recruitment. We cannot improve our recruitment if we cannot improve our coaching, our technical knowledge. So, and the two things go hand in hand. It's a business. It's unfortunate that it is the way that it is. I just don't think it's not likely to change until we see change of leadership in the FA.
No, definitely. Jack, I saw your mic flashing there.
No, I was agreeing, to be honest. It does need to enhance itself. I think there's an element of when you go on courses, especially when they're put on such a high pedestal by EPPP, professional clubs, professional academies. I've been chasing the A license from 18, and I got on the course a year and a half ago. I'm 32, and I've been chasing it for that long. But had to take 2-3 years between the course to make sure I understood. I was working through the playing formats of the prerequisites of the course to understand each stage for myself. You know, working from under-8s all the way up to men's football, and that's when I took the real dive and started to apply for UEFA A license. But don't get me wrong, it took me three or four stabs until the BME bursary came up, and I started, and then I applied through the A license like that. That was the opportunity I had. It took a while, but I only had that opportunity because I was a little bit more proactive. Okay, so what do these FA tutors have to do to be able to deliver these courses? In 2017-18, I went for the affiliate tutor role with the FA to understand, you know, what's behind the, you know, the presentations and the, you know, the FA club are and everything else that they deliver, you know. And it was great insight. I think I walked in and did an education and training course. It was free. It was brilliant. One of the best courses that I've ever been on. And I think at that time they were transitioning that the holistic approach, just the process, just that little bit more from where it had been. A massive change in the tutoring staff or the staff that were delivering the courses. Quite an overhaul. From my neck of the woods anyway, some of the old names which was a shame, because I agreed with it absolutely wrong. The assessment does need to be a little bit old school with this new school approach. There needs to be a real blend. I know you want to go on moving forward. But that technical detail's got to be there. I was part of a collaboration for a company that I work for. They've just partnered with another style coach education program, or a technical based. I don't know whether to mention them or not, but a gentleman called Alf runs that company. And I sat on one of their introductory virtual courses for our collaboration on Saturday, and that married up technical detail plus science. They're on a plate. They're for you to read. This is why we do this. This is why we do that. And I don't think I've ever had that from a FA course. you know, here's the formula of why we do it. Mm. Where in previous courses that I've been on, it's kind of like, well, what would you teach? What did the players see? And it's the process, like Apple said. So, and there's no definitive answer. And I think there's so many, at one point in my career as a coach, I was looking for someone to give me answers. I hold my hands up, because the pathway, or my pathway, at one point I didn't feel like I knew enough, so I needed more information from other people. Now, where I am in my coaching is something completely different. I have my own game model, my own game responsibilities, my own principles of play, and that's all been built of, you know, the last two off my A license, really, and a bit of work before that. So, to tie it back out, there does need to be a little bit more. Gosh, I've forgotten the old term that the boys, that the old shooters used to say, like, what, you know, what I say, you do type autocratic style of delivery with good quality technical detail, where it just got a bit fluffy in the middle. For my generation, me, in the last 6 years, it just went a bit too fluffy. And if there's too much freedom for the players, the recruitment side of it, I believe, is you're only going to see raw talent come through rather than, you know, coach talent come through.
Jack, mate, that is so on the money. I agree so heavily with everything that you've just said. We have become way too fluffy. We've become too holistic. We've gone in the other direction. It's forgive me for turning it political, but it's, if you look at where we are politically, we've gone from being so a Labour-run country to the point of where everyone started to rebel and revolt, and it's now gone too conservative. And now society, in its weird way to revolt, has gone too liberal again, or is sort of certainly heading that way. I don't think the holistic approach is the best approach. As you said, otherwise, all we're seeing is the raw talent, the naturally gifted players will make it through. But what about those lads that actually need information and need to be told how to do a certain thing a certain way, as opposed to just finding their own way? Because, you know, we take away the teaching element by doing that. We're kind of just, you end up really a babysitter, a glorified babysitter. And a lot of coaches, you know, I roll up to MK and I'll see a lot of coaches, they set up these sessions that look great and they don't coach. They don't coach, they stand back and go, what do you think? You can't let you can't let the patients run the asylum. You know, you have to be the doctor, you have to, you know, are educated, you know, we have to teach them, that's why we're there, we have to show them. No, Daryl, you don't take the ball like that on the turn, this is how you take it on a half turn, your body has to make that shape, this is the reason why it has to make that shape, athletically, mechanically, this is why, then now leads into your next skill move, or your next move, and your head's got to be up, you have to be able to do these kinds of things. We don't do that anymore. Instead, if you're caught saying something like that, it's, oh, well, don't you think that you're limiting them? Well, no, not really. But then it's so difficult to argue against it when it's your head of coaching telling you, this is how we want to do things. We want it to be more holistic. And you say, okay, but it's not realistic. It's holistic, but it's not realistic. But yeah, that's just my opinion. Jack, again, right on the money, mate. Absolutely right on the money.
No, I appreciate it, but you're right there. I think there's coach education, right? And then I believe there's a coaching craft. So your coaching craft of when to be, no, do this, or what did you see there? Why were you trying that? What was the picture that you saw? And let's work it out. Let's work it out why you took it on your front foot instead of your back foot. Let's work it out why, you know, you didn't see the first time pass. Blah, 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 blah. So there's a time to ask questions, 100%, and you go through the coach's interventions, but they're a bit rigid as it is, but that's a topic for another night, maybe, yes. But it's the craft of when to be holistic and when to and when not to, like, and tell them what to do, because otherwise you become a facilitator. But the onus is on the educator, I believe, on the education to give you the three, maybe four ingredients of that craft, of coaching, of the coaching craft. And you as an individual that's just paid 5.5K for 4K, 3K, bursary, don't get me wrong, 10%, you know, whatever it might have been, you as an individual piece together your craft out of the four or five ingredients that we should give you. Or you go the long way around and you learn it on your own, you've got a bit of finesse, you've got a bit of experience, you've played the game, you haven't played the game. I don't know, it's like them pre-made salad dressings that you get from any supermarket. You've got to shake it up before you put it on the salad, otherwise you just get one chunk at a time. Like a chunk of oil at the top. Excuse the analogy, I don't know where I was going there, but I hope that makes sense.
It does make sense, and what makes it even more sense, guys, is for you guys to click on all four of our profiles, hit that follow button, hit that bell button, make sure you hit the little greenhouse at the top, subscribe and follow to the Coaches Network. And you know, just to kind of just touch on what everyone's been saying so far, guys, you know, you're tuned into the live edition of the Coaches Network podcast where we're discussing coach education courses. I'm joined by Jacques Edouard, UEFA A licensed candidate, Apple Westcott, UEFA A licensed candidate, and Joe Black, who will be joining us very shortly to tell us a little bit more about his journey and his thoughts on the topic tonight. But just on that note, guys, join that discussion on Twitter as well, hashtag the Coaches Network. I know there's a few comments coming through on there as well, so make sure you let everyone know what we're talking about. Let us know your thoughts. There will be an opportunity for people to join the stage shortly to get some questions in and throw some opinions about as well, so we can get there. You know, get the conversation going. But on that, you know, there's a couple of things that Jacques and Apple have just touched there. You know, it is that holistic, you know, I think holistic is the way to go. But I think coming back to one of your previous points and, you know, about maybe having some bolt-ons around some of the additional content for the coaches might be worth kind of pursuing. You know, it was a shame to see kind of the FA dissolve the position specific courses, because I think maybe you got some of that technical detail that we're talking about there in those courses. They previously had the developing midfielders, developing defenders, and developing strikers or forwards courses before. So it'll be interesting to see whether that kind of resurfaces over the next couple of years or at any point in the future. Jack, to kind of, you know, touch on your point as well regarding the science attached to it, and I think to be fair, where the FA have, you know, gone with the Advanced Youth Award, in some of those elements you probably do get some of that science attached to it. There is a bit more research kind of, I think there's research going throughout all the courses they do, but I think there's a bit more shared about what the research actually is and how it actually links into what you're being taught, if you like. But again, apps back to your one as well. And, you know, you're talking there about going on the courses, and I think when coaches are on courses, it is a bit of the luck of the draw with a coach educator as well. You know, I'm sure you've been on courses, and I'm sure as well for yourself, Jack and Joe and everyone else in the audience there, if you've ever been on a coach education course, it might not be the course that's the content of the course specifically that's kind of made it a good or bad experience, if you like. It might be the actual tutor that's in front of you delivering. It might be how well you can connected you are to that tutor, or even just the cohort of the people that are on your course. So there's so many variables within that. I mean, I certainly find from my experience as an educator that, you know, I deliver so many different courses, but no one course is the same, or no two courses are the same, rather. You know, you kind of got a core content that you want to kind of cover, but how much depth and breadth you give to each area will be based on the group in front of you, essentially. But it'd be interesting to maybe get your perspectives on if there's any key areas that you've gone through your path when you thought, you know, that's really helped me, or there's some specific parts that maybe you've had experience with that you felt, you know what, I'm not too sure that was required, or if the courses are even pitched at the right levels. I know, Apple, you touched on obviously the Dutch level one equivalent, if you like, and you know, the level of detail that goes into that. It was interesting. I was having a conversation recently with Raymond Verheyen, you know, the world renowned Dutch coach, who's now working as a coach educator, and you know, we had a really in depth discussion, which you should also keep an eye out for over the next couple of weeks, coming out live on the Coaches Network podcast. We talked about, you know, whether there's enough information being given to coaches on how to actually coach. And, you know, coming back to the experience that you talked about, where coaches are stepping back and just saying, you know, asking too many questions. I think questions are brilliant. But at some point, you need to get in there and coach the detail. But then this is where one of my frustrations comes, and one of my observations is I'm not too sure that enough of the modern day coach educators actually have that knowledge themselves. So if they haven't got it, what hope have the coaches got? Now that's what my observation is. And I'll be honest, you know, I've seen some coach educators, and I think to myself, would I come to one of your courses? But maybe that's me looking at it from the other side of the situation. Do you know what I mean? Having gone through...
Can I jump on that?
Go for it.
Sorry to jump in. I hate to do this to you. What you just said there is exactly my issue when it comes to jobs and coaching. So the same way you just said, look, there are other educators that you've looked at, you think to yourself, wow, would I really want to be in that course? I look at a lot of coaches and say, how the hell do we have the same qualification? How? Tell me how. How do we have the same education, but this is what you're doing, and this is the key thing,
though, Apps. It's the same qualification, not education.
And this is the issue. So therefore, this one-size-fits-all approach to courses does not work. So, Jack, if you want to do a petition to the FA saying, hey... Let's have grassroots qualifications, and then let's have, hey, I'm a serious coach qualification. Like, if that's what we want to do, then I would sign that position three times.
I think what's probably another way to look at it, Apps, is when you're, you know, coming back to something that you said as well, Jack, you talked about working through the age groups to get some experiences and, I guess, try and understand the pathway. I think for me, where one of the benefits I've had in my personal coaching journey is... I kind of knew before I got into it, or when I first got into it, that the age group that I was coming into was probably in and around the age that I wanted to work with. I think not enough coaches understand or have really considered where do I actually see myself fitting in terms of that coach development, that youth development pathway. Is it even within youth development? And, you know, there's this quite often what you see, and not just in elite football, if you like, but even in grassroots, a lot of coaches start with the youngest age groups in the foundation phase, whether that be the sevens, eights, nines, tens, or whatever that might be. But actually, they just don't really have a skill set for that age group at all. And it's not to say that you can't learn these things, but there's going to be some things you're naturally more inclined to, I guess, working within. So for me personally, I started my coaching journey with working at under 14s boys. I knew from the get-go that this is the age group that I want to work with, in and around that age group, or, you know, kind of anything upwards. And now, you know, I've been coaching for just over 10 years, and the majority of my experiences have been predominantly with 14s to kind of 23s, where with experiences here and there, you know, outside of that, because I do think it's important to get some of those experiences. But, you know, my message would be that any coach listening to this that's considering what pathway to go down, or whether they've recently just come into the game, how they should maybe approach it, is think about straight away, where do you see yourself end up? Where do you want to end up? And then really target those age groups, even if it is in grassroots. So if I know that I want to work at under 16s and I want to go and work in the elite game with Man United or Chelsea's, whoever's academy at under 16s, go and understand what it looks like to work with under 16s. There's no point working with 8s, 9s, 10s to then go and say, right, I still want to work with 16s. Yes, it might be important to have some of those experiences, some of those observations that you might make and learn off coaches in different ways. But I think you really need to be a bit more specific and tailored around the environment you put yourself in the first place.
Agreed. Definitely agree with that.
When I was thinking about what you mentioned, you know, I was going through the questions before coming on the call, and one thing I learned, or one thing I'll do, like, you know, do again, is I'd be more specific about what level I wanted to coach at. But whilst you were talking then, yes, I was just thinking, I don't know, the amount of volunteers there are in the game and you know, that hold up non-league clubs, the grassroots clubs, all the volunteers, mums, dads, you know, coaches, supporting a safe environment for young people on their journey in football is second to none. And once you have the bug of supporting in football and developing within football, it's hard to shake. So there's a massive element of that has to be considered. I think there's just where I am personally on my pathway, I wouldn't want anyone to judge compared to where they are on their journey. The bug of coaching is so hard to shake and get rid of. So there is that balance, and I think that's why there should be, you know, two strands of courses, one for the grassroots level game and one for the professional. But I think you need that. Whilst you were speaking, also I was thinking of a good friend of mine that joined an academy. I think they're a Cat 2, between a Cat 2 and a Cat 3 academy. And his
induction process was probably one of the best induction processes I've heard of, okay, for me personally. And that was that he spent 2 weeks in the foundation phase, 2 weeks in the YD phase, and then 2 weeks observing the pro development phase, right? And whilst he was in and around those age groups for the 2 weeks each, he was being assessed. And then it was kind of, well, the next season's coming up, and, you know, you scored 15 out of 20 with this age group, 12 out of 10, and 12 out of 20, and an 8 out of 20 on this one. And it's like, okay, so we're going to work with you for your DAP or your development action plan point to, you know, work with this phase. I thought that's not bad. So they weren't hiring for a specific age group lead, assistant, or anything else like that, but they were just looking for good people. I thought that was an incredible induction process.
I think
that does sound good.
Anyone else thinks or disagrees?
No, Jack, I mean, that actually sounds like the way that, if I was head of coaching, that's probably more of what I would do. Yeah, don't get me wrong, if a coach leaves, you know, you're looking for a specific type, but I think if you're going to do an interview, if you're going to get somebody in.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you can, I would say try to invite them in for a few sessions, and if you can get them in with the foundation, the YB, with the pro phase, and sort of see where they fit in, and if they fit in, really, you know, sort of into the environment where you actually have the space available.
No, I think you know, it's a great way of doing things. I think the only thing is time. How much time have you got to kind of put someone through that sort of process? But, you know, and the other side is, if you bring someone into an environment,
you know how much time they've got in the game, in the academies. You know, they've got so much time.
Yeah,
you
know, I think the only thing I would say is, a lot of people go into these clubs and they want a ready-made product. They want someone who's just going to slot right in. They don't want to have to hold anyone's hand to find out where they're going to fit in. And this is why sometimes it comes back to that whole thing of, you know, it's not what you know, it's who you know. So if you've got the right people around you,
recruitment process as well.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You know, just going to take a second here to refresh the room again. Just want to give a quick shout out to all the mothers out there, my wife especially. Jacques, yours, you know, your recent one. And Apps, you know, congrats on your recent one as well. And happy Mother's Day to Joel Black too. But you tune into the live edition of the Coaches Network podcast, guys. We're discussing coach education courses here in the UK specifically, more specifically England. It'll be interesting to get your thoughts and opinions on everything the guys are discussing. Use the hashtag The Coaches Network on Twitter to join in the conversations on there. I know there's a couple points being made at the moment. And if you've got anything you want to add, feel free to raise your hand. You know, we'll start bringing people to the stage. And we've got the first person here already. Let's bring her to the stage. I think she's here. Chloe,
yes, I am.
You're on stage.
Thank you. It's a really interesting discussion. So a bit of background on me, I've only done a level one, and I've been coaching for about 8 years. And to be honest, the reason why I haven't been able to progress to do a level two has mainly been financial. And although I've worked for a few different clubs, no one's ever kind of pointed me in the right direction of doing a level two. But what I find really interesting about this discussion is that I feel that over the period of 8 years coaching, I've developed a greater knowledge in football than other people who have done a level one. So kind of at the same time, I feel as if you know, I've got maybe the experience of someone who would have done a level two, but without actually having done it. And I think what I found most annoying about it is the fact that it really holds me back. It's holding me back from, you know, potential other coaching roles, because everybody's looking for at least a level two. So that's the first thing. The other thing is, I actually do agree with you about, you know, differentiating between the pro game and the grassroots. And it does confuse me sometimes when I look at the age groups and I'm thinking, okay, so if I've done a level one, what age group would be too old for me to coach because of my qualification? Am I looking at under 14s? Am I looking at under 12s? What how does it relate? And then if I've done a UEFA A, UEFA B, or my level two, how does that then change what age groups I can work with? Or really, does it? Because I, you know, I work alongside level two coaches, I work alongside UEFA B coaches, and they're all doing the same job as me. They're taking on the same teams as me. Yes, to some extent, some of them have, you know, the higher abilities, but I don't see a lot of differentiation between what I do and what they do. So I'd just be interested to know your thoughts on that, really.
Yeah, no, thank you for coming to the stage, Chloe. I think, you know, it's a interesting conversation so far, and I think that's an interesting point you've made. The first thing I would say is, and obviously I'll let Jacques and Apps and Joe, when he's ready, to come and jump in on it, but first thing I would say is, you can have all the experience in the world, but some people will still require certain qualifications. But at the same time, you know, you something really key that you mentioned, that you've been coaching for 8 years and you feel like you might be on the same level as some level two coaches. Let me be frank and blunt with you. You're probably just as good as maybe some UEFA B and UEFA A licensed coaches out there. And this is where, I guess, you know, the crux of this conversation is really, you know, coming at, certainly from Apple's perspective, in that understanding, just because you've got a qualification doesn't necessarily make you a top coach, doesn't make you a great coach. We've lost her, but she made an interesting point, so I'll carry on. Yeah, just because you've got those qualifications doesn't necessarily mean you are a good coach. But what you'll understand is, going through the qualifications is just a formality in some ways, and what you do with those qualifications and the experience you get in between that is obviously down to you. I'll share an example. So I remember when I finished my UEFA B license a number of years ago now, you know, the coach educator had no idea what I was actually doing on a day to day, and no idea about my environment and the circumstances I was coaching in. So I was actually coaching about 20 hours a week at the time, across a very different, very varied ranges of environments, you know, from outfield coaching to goalkeeping coaching, and, you know, in the academy setting and outside of it too. Now, when I finished my UEFA B license, this is part of the issue. On the action plan, he said, go away and do 50 hours at this level and then go and do your A license. Little did he know that was literally just 3 weeks for me. And this is the key part. You know, there's very generic things that coach educators in some of these courses direct you to do, which leaves you to kind of to your own devices a little bit. Now, in terms of your personal circumstances, one thing you might want to consider is touching base with your county FA. I know that some of the county FAs over recent months, I don't know how the pandemic has maybe affected it, but there was something called the 100 FC Women's Club, which is basically a bursary that was available for female coaches to go and pursue their level two, and in some cases maybe even, I think, get some sort of support for their maybe B license qualifications if they were ready for it. So it might just be worth something to consider there. One other thing that I find as well with grassroots clubs, and I actually ended up getting my youth module 1, 2, and 3 paid for by my grassroots club at the time, because I just asked, is there a pot available for you to kind of put towards my coach education courses? And you'll be surprised how many clubs actually have a pot they never really tell anyone about. Even county FAs, they've got a pot, they never really advertise it. And you'll end up finding out that just by asking the question, you might actually just get some funding. So just that's just a little bit from me. I don't know if Jack, your mic's flashing. I don't know if you want to jump in.
Great story, Chloe. And, you know, eight years down the pathway is awesome to be in the game. I'm not sure if Levy wants to be on stage too. So I'll speak a little bit louder and I'll speak quicker. 100% seek funding from either your local county FA or direct to the FA education. There's bursaries all over the place for level two and level three. So I believe I still have the contact in my phone book for the individual that works with the bursaries. So feel free to connect with me after, and I should be able to, you know, put an email between the two of you, and then you can ask them your questions.
Jack, you better drop me that contact, mate. You better drop me that contact before you give that to Chloe.
You know, I just had to double check in the room to see if my institute tutor was in as well, just before, make sure that I get signed off for my A license before when we get back to North, that for everything that we've been talking about. So yes, that should be fine. So contact me away from here. I should be able to help with some sort of bursary for your level two if there's a financial thing preventing you from progressing in your coach education. And secondly, yes is right. You know, you could be working alongside. I've worked alongside UEFA B, UEFA A coaches, and felt that. Oh wait a minute, I can play ball here too. I'm not. No, I can. Excuse the pun, but I can go 1v1 here as well. So, you know, but challenge yourself, and the qualification allows that and demonstrates that you've, you know, I dislike the word or the phrase like tick boxes. There's a reason for the courses. There is a reason. I still believe in that, because you're going to pick up something that you didn't know the morning of the course, 100%, whether it's over tea with somebody who's a candidate, or the tutor. You're going to pick something up in that environment because everyone's, you know, everyone's there to learn. So the courses are brilliant for that. That's one, two. Nothing more. That's it. Connect with me after, and it's important to jump on the courses. Which I'll be happy.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. I will connect with you after this.
Just a final one as well, Chloe. You, another point that you mentioned was regarding the. I'm just trying to think now. You said something else. I was just about to repeat. I can't remember what it was. If I remember, I'll bring you back to the stage. But Apps, you know, what are your thoughts on that? You know, and just to share your experiences regarding your coaching qualifications. I know that you're currently doing your A license. Am I right in thinking you're doing it virtually as well?
No. So there's huge delays all over the place with various different things and different reasons, and nothing's really being explained appropriately. Firstly, Chloe, well done. You've been coaching quite a while. I think you said 8 years, which is probably longer than the majority of the people that were sat in my classroom next to me. Do you know what? I sound bitter about it, and I am bitter about it. I'm pissed off about it. I'm pissed off that someone could be coaching 2 years and get to the same level as I am and apply for the same jobs and probably get those jobs, not because they deserve them, but because they have the same piece of paper. I'm pissed off that someone can jump the queue that much, you know, and get a job that they don't really deserve, that they shouldn't have. I'm pissed off that people like you are overlooked. I'm pissed off that people like you who can't afford the coaching course can't have the job because you don't have that piece of paper. Like Jack, I do believe in the courses. I do believe they serve a purpose, but they absolutely must be fit for purpose. They absolutely must be made available for people who should be on those courses. There must be ways to get people on these courses. There's so many fantastic coaches I've seen that don't have a level two. Fantastic coaches. When I say fantastic, I'm talking they potentially could be masterminds. So some of the guys, some of these South American guys I've seen in Stratton Common and out there doing stuff with the kids from the estate for free, and you hear how they talk so passionately and they talk with depth and actual knowledge because they watch the game, they love the game, they feel the game, it runs through their veins, and you listen to the things that they say and they make sense, but they can't afford a level two or a level three. And therefore, they don't work in football full time. So football's the big loser there, not him. Football's the one that sort of lost out. And right now, I'd say with people like yourself, Chloe, who can't get on a certain course. You know, look, money should never be a reason why anyone cannot play or coach football. That should never be a reason. And it's. It really kind of highlights a lot of the things that I said in my first point, yes, about it just being a business. Courses are a business. The FAs have to stop looking at the courses as a business. And that won't change until the culture of football in this country changes. If you, I mean, I was having a discussion. It wasn't a discussion. I take it back. It started out as ridicule or an attempted ridicule by Curtis Woodhouse, ex-player. I think he's an ex-boxer as well, on Twitter. He's got 50,000 followers and they all kiss his ass and everyone wanted to jump on the bandwagon. He was talking negatively about teams that build from the back, play out from the back. And I had to call him out. I had to say it. You're talking shit. What is all of this playing out from the back rubbish? And I said, well, how can you call something rubbish because you don't understand it? There's a process. Can you explain to me the logic behind launching a ball 70 yards when the chances, like the odds are really in favour of the 6 foot five defender to win the header over the 5 foot 10 striker? So tell me, why would you not choose to play out from the back rather than launch that ball 70 yards? You don't know what you're talking about. You're coaching in a fake world. It's, you know, results don't matter. Well, results matter because they matter to me. And I make that very, very clear in how I coach. I don't want to lose. I think I've got the best win percentage at MK Dons, I'm pretty sure. I think I've only lost one, but that's kind of irrelevant. But winning matters, and that comes out in your coaching. You have to make sure the players understand that winning matters, not at the detriment of their development, but they have to understand what they're going into. In this business, results count. That's what pays their bills. That's what keeps people in the job. So we have to understand that. But this is what I mean, that mentality that Curtis had on Twitter, with regards to philosophy, styles of play, that's a very similar philosophy that people in the FA have towards coaching courses. Yeah, we'll put a bit of that in there. Because they have to be seen to be trying to do a certain thing. They have to be seen to be trying to do or include certain people, because they have to be inclusive. They have to be this, they have to be that, even though the prices aren't inclusive, even though the frequency of the courses are not inclusive, who they make the courses available to at times are not inclusive. So we have to stop looking at the culture of football in this country has to change. It hasn't changed because the people that were in charge 20 years ago are still in charge today.
I don't mind me throwing something in there, but I also feel as though the level of your experience within the game before you even get to your level one or whatever isn't also taken into account. I mean, by that, what I mean is, okay, what experience do I have to demonstrate that I've had in football in order for me to do a level one? And also on the same note, one of the things that I've found is that there seems to be a bit more opportunity if you've reached a certain level as a player in football to become a coach. Especially, maybe this is more so in the female game than in the male game, but I've definitely noticed that, you know, if you're a player and you play for one of the top Premier League women's clubs, then if you want to go into coaching, it's far easier to get yourself into a position, mainly because of who you know. But I really struggle, and I think from the female football coaches I know at my kind of level, I struggle to get people to almost respect my experience as a player, as a coach, because it's not as high as theirs. And I find that quite down-putting. You know, I've played Sunday League, I've played football for many, many, many years, but I haven't necessarily decided to take it to the level where I want to play in a national team, or, you know, whatever my level is. Maybe that's not where I want to be, but I've made the conscious decision that I want to take coaching further. So I definitely think that there is an element of experience within the game that is either not taken into account when you start out, or creates this kind of hierarchy of who is going to succeed better than others.
I think you make some good points there, Chloe. You know, just reminded me of what my previous point was as well. You talked there about, you know, the qualifications and maybe what qualifications required to actually coach at different levels. I think something to kind of maybe share a bit more perspective on. Traditionally, if you look at all other national governing bodies, a level one qualification is usually seen as an assistant coaching qualification. Whereas, you know, not the case anymore, but if you go back maybe 6-7 years ago, you didn't need a level one you could go straight into a level two, and that could be an entry level qualification. And level one is probably any for anyone kind of just maybe looking to kind of dip their toe in the water, if you like. Whereas now, that the FA's level one qualification is probably a lot more in depth than you would get across the other governing bodies in their different sports. So that's probably one thing to kind of highlight there. I think you make a great point in that as a coach. I can't speak specifically for the female game, but I think generally, if you have had some sort of playing experience, it's often considered an advantage, but not actually taken into account, like you said, what's previously been done. And I think that's where, you know, some of the external qualifications outside of the FA. So, for instance, if you look at maybe higher up the ladder, you've got LMA qualifications as an example, which is a league managers association for anyone that's not aware. But they, you know, they've got their own football management diploma, which is quite an extensive application, where it does include, you know, almost writing a cover letter and listing your references and things like that. I know that the B license has got some sort of, and even the A license have got similar kind of application processes. But I find from my experience, it's very easy to kind of get around those things. Certainly if you've got a good reference or you know someone that can kind of write you one, because a lot more often than not, these things never really get looked into and checked upon. So I think that's just something to consider there. I'm conscious, obviously, we've got other people to kind of bring on the stage, but I don't know if there's anything you want to kind of add or touch on beyond that, Chloe.
No, not really. I think I kind of I hear what you're saying, and I think it's, you know, I definitely find these groups useful because, you know, there's so much about coaching that I personally don't know. And I think that the information that's out there that's provided through clubs, unless you're with, you know, a club that really invests in their coaches, you know, it can be quite a lonely journey, to be honest. So it's always helpful to kind of understand a little bit more about how to get to where you want to be. And I think, especially in the coaching journey, being able to make sure that, you know, your level of experience and your coaching qualification kind of match up. So I hope that through that I'll get my level 2 done and I'll be on to my UEFA B very soon. But thank you for having me on
there. No worries, that's excellent. You know, get in touch with Jacques, he'll probably have that contact for you if Apple hasn't really got to him first. But if you want any additional support, what you can do, guys, just, you know, for everyone in the group, really, you know, click on our profiles, you know, hit that picture, hit the follow button. Hit the club little greenhouse at the top, join the Coaches Network club. And for anyone that's not aware, there is a Coaches Network podcast where we're speaking to a range of different coaches and people from all different walks of life around development, both in the talent and athlete space, but also personal development. So, you know, head over to Spotify, Apple, whichever platform you use, search the Coaches Network podcast. I'm sure you'll find some great content in there.
Name drop, please.
Yeah, just one of many, man. But you know, I've got some things coming up. But you'll have to tune in and potentially, you know, subscribe before I let some more information out. But Chloe, look, thank you for your contribution this evening. Really appreciate it. I'm gonna move you back to the audience and bring someone else up shortly. Right. We've got Salman. Have I said that right? Yeah, Salman.
That's correct, yeah. Good evening, guys. Really enjoyed this discussion. Fascinating sort of topics raised so far. I want to sort of go back to sort of like grassroots level, because my background is a grassroots coach. And what we'll say, I started coaching probably around 25 years ago. And I remember doing my level two then. And on level two, we had a guy doing level two and level three at the same time. So it's definitely changed in terms of how things are sort of formatted and organised now. What I do want to sort of do is sort of, I'm not, you know, an FA sort of fan, for instance, but I do want to sort of bang the drum slightly on what it did at the moment, in terms of, like, you've got sort of like the old school kind of coach who's very sort of like win orientated, like Apple mentioned sort of Kurt Woodhouse kind of background, where they, you know, lump the ball forward, let's try and get results as quick as we can in the most sort of easiest way possible. Whereas now, what the FA are doing in some ways, and I think Pete Sturgis is behind this quite a lot, I'm quite a big fan of his, in terms of encouraging creativity amongst young players and trying to instill that in grassroots coaches from the day one. So I've done a couple of his road shows where, you know, he's put some fantastic sessions based around encouraging creativity and this mantra of staying on the ball And I think if we can get that into coaches from a young age, I know I'm not trying to say make sort of players forget the other aspects of the game, for instance, but if grassroots coaching has this consistent message of trying to develop players and look at the long-term picture rather than the, you know, the next game and try and win that, try and look at the bigger picture and say, can we develop a player within our ranks who could potentially play for England, and by doing so help the wider picture here. I mean, you know, you look at the players we've got at the moment, so there are things that obviously are taking place in academies which are working. So, you know, we've got a great crop of players such as, you know, Sterling, Saka, Foden, Smith Rowe, Grealish, Sancho. You know, these guys are exciting young players who've not been sort of an English type of player. Well, England has not seen these kind of players for quite a while, I would imagine, in the national team. And also, you look at Germany now. Now, they're raiding England now for the young players. How many young players are going to play in Germany? Who are these sort of creative players who are quick on their feet, can take people in 1v1s, you know, whereas their game has almost, like, gone backwards in some ways. In obviously, Bayern Munich are a fantastic side, but their game has gone backwards as a national game, and now they're looking at England. So I think you made some great points, as I mentioned, guys, but I think there is some good stuff taking place in coach education and encouraging grassroots coaches to look at the bigger picture and can they develop, you know, the next Sterling, the next Sancho, the next Foden, and encouraging that rather than, you know, this win kind of philosophy we've had for years within the game itself. It can only be good for the game, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike Flash, you want to jump in on that one first, or shall I go?
Yeah, please. Simon, you know, you made some really interesting points, but you ruffled my feathers a little bit when you mentioned about how we're developing players and, you know, the FA are doing great things. Listen, let me explain something. We have some of the best raw talented players in the world in this country. I make no bones about that. But the reason why these players have had to go abroad is because they can't get first team football here, and that's because boils down to coach education. Jadon Sancho couldn't get in the first team at Manchester City under Pep Guardiola. Phil Foden, pretty much the same. He still doesn't feature regularly, even though he can see how good he is. You know, and again, so many other really, really talented young lads that have left their clubs and have gone to Germany to try to better themselves. Which, by the way, well done to them, because in past times that wouldn't have happened, and instead we would have seen these guys end up in non-league football or probably on a street corner somewhere selling drugs. So I'm happy to see these guys branching out, going to different countries and still standing out. But the reason why they stand out in those countries isn't because the level of football is below, it's because they're actually getting the opportunity to play. And they're playing in a country where they actually believe in a philosophy and a way of playing. And these players stand out for that reason, because they're good at that. Whereas over here, they don't stand out, well, for starters, because they don't get the opportunity in the first team. But that's because the guys that manage them, the people that coach them and manage them, they don't use players with that kind of talent. Even though we know that they're potential world beaters, they still won't use the talent, and it's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with what you're saying there. Just to sort of play a bit of devil's advocate here, though, but do you not feel now, as a nation, you know, for the media, for instance, you know, in the past, someone like Grealish, they would have called him a ball hogger, they would have called him greedy, you know, they called him selfish. Now they kind of come around to the idea that, you know, for us to go forward as a country, we need players like him who can get on the ball, stay on the ball, and win games almost single-handedly. And, you know, he's been encouraged to be the player that he is now, whereas, you know, maybe, I don't know, in the last 5 or 10 years, someone like him would have been frowned upon as a player. So there is sort of small steps happening.
Do you want my honest answer to that? Do you want my honest answer to that? I don't apologise, but I'll just say how it is. The media does still call players like him greedy and everything else. But do you know what they also call him? They call him Paul Pogba. Mm. If it's Paul Pogba, he's greedy. He's undermotivated. Yeah. He's lazy. If it's Jack Grealish, he's fantastic. He's amazing. Look at him. So it's that narrative is wasted on me, because we know what that really is.
That's a fair point. That's probably another clubhouse chat you could do, guys, I suppose. But yeah, I totally get the element of what you're trying to say there in terms of, you know, Grealish and Pogba, two different people completely in terms of, you know, same abilities in many aspects, but one thing defines how they're viewed by the media, isn't it? We know what that is.
Definitely, Simon. You know, just to kind of tail in off what Apple said there as well, there's a couple of things that, you know, you've touched on as well. I don't know how much credit you can give the coach education pathway, and I think one of my biggest gripes with the coach education pathway in the way that it is now, and I'm quite vocal about this, is I think it leaves too much room for coaches to step away from actually coaching and just putting on sessions. It leaves too much room, because you can get away with literally letting your players play a game the whole session, and then say, if someone questions you on that and say, well, why have you done that? Well, I'm letting the game be the teacher. Nonsense. You're not letting the game be a teacher. You're just not coaching. You're just letting the players play. Nothing's being taught here until some reflection's being done. And if you're not going to step in and give some interventions where you're going to be a bit directive, that's not a problem. We can live with that. But what you've got to be doing is you've got to be checking understanding. You've got to be checking knowledge. You've got to be checking progress, and you know, through questioning. And it's using effective questioning as well. You know, and I'm very passionate about this bit myself, in that, you know, I get frustrated, and you know, I'll use that term that Apple's here, you know, if rustles my feathers, if you like, when I see a coach ask questions that are useless. And what I mean by that, you know, oh, have you enjoyed the session? Who cares if they've enjoyed the session? That's not important. What you want to find out is, what did they enjoy? Why did they enjoy it? What did they learn? How is that bit that they've learned or they've understood now going to help them? How are they going to utilize that information they've just picked up in that session going forward? And it's asking those deeper questions to really, you know, if your approach is going to be, I'm going to take a bit more of a relaxed approach and have a bit more of a collaborative discussion with my players, that's fine. But ask the right questions. And you know, my experience tells me, you know, it'd be interesting to get Jacques and Ab's views on this as well, but my experience tells me, it might be in naivety in some ways, I believe the players have all the answers if they're asked the right questions.
100%, and I think that's why, you know, Pete Sturgis is an absolute specialist in the realm of foundation phase football for players aged 5 to 8, or 5 to 11. And that's, you know, it relates to what we were talking about earlier. That is a specialist subject for him, and he nails it every time. I don't personally look a lot into his work, because my personal passions lie in different phases of football, even though bits of it are very, very, very important. The ball mastery, staying on the ball at 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, are crucial. Not playing styles, not systems, not, you know, we do this to do that. It's, you know, 1v1s, overloads, underloads, like. So I agree with you, Salman, about, and I don't know if he is part of the FA education, but you know, that's his bag. That, you know, that's why he's got, I can't tell you how many books on foundation phase football, and that's what makes him great within that realm. And he doesn't go any higher or lower. It's all about the gameplay of ball mastery for that phase. So in that instance, yes, incredible steps. But would you say that he's a one-man band with an FA badge on? Don't know. Potentially. But to tie into what Yasser's saying about questioning is part of the craft. The art of questioning should be part of the coach education, in my personal opinion. I know it is dabbled within, but not as a, right, so this goes in the toolbox. Does your intuition tell you when to use the art of questioning? Because sometimes players just need to be told. I think Apple said it earlier, sometimes you've got to tell a player. Can't be watching League One, League Two football, where a registered player for the first team, or even the youth team that has made an appearance for the first team, can't trap a ball in the half turn and have at least two pictures ready in his mind to execute, or her mind to execute at that level. So I don't know. I think I'm going to keep banging the drum on, it has to be specialist for development and professional. As well as age specific, which they've done sort of, but then I think to resit my youth module 3, I had to go to a new level 2. If I'm not mistaken, yes, that's right, isn't it?
Like youth mod 3 would have been part of the B license and not the level 2. So mod 1, mod 2 was kind of phased into the level 2.
So.
That's what I was trying to get. That is, I don't know. It's a money game. It's funny. I was in a room the other night, and I think the gents down the bottom that how they're saying that the States are so much further ahead financially within the game than we are here. So we're actually behind financially, and maybe that's why we've seen a price hike in courses. But don't get me wrong. The best question I've ever been asked was by my UEFA A in situ tutor. He said, how would you plan for 3 games in 9 days? Right at the start of the first lockdown for us in the UK, and I managed to get all of my notepads, all of my post-it notes, all of my pictures, all of my session designs on in one document of about 180 slides, all because he asked me that question with his FA tutor hat on. And now I have, I believe, and it's still an evolving project, program, but model, game model principles and responsibilities all out of one question from a gentleman that works in the FA, who no longer works there because he got made redundant when they changed everything around recently. So, yes, some of them are doing great things, but are they doing it as individuals and not an organisation or association?
Definitely.
Before I go, because I don't want to keep you guys too long, first of all, yes, I totally agree with what you said about the question, because like, I mean, I work in education, so, you know, what I do on the football pitch is almost similar to my style of question and what I do in the classroom, so totally agree with your view on that. And also, final shot, Joe, where is he tonight? I coached him as a kid at my grassroots club for years back, so I'm looking forward to him coming on tonight, but obviously he's gone AWOL, so slap on the wrist for him, we'll speak to him next time.
No worries, I'm sure he'll be back next week. But just on that, you know, if you want some more information on what Pete Sturgis does and the way that he works, tune into the Coaches Network podcast, episode 46, Insights with Pete Sturgis, and there's plenty more where that came from too. So no, Salman, thank you for coming to the stage. Thank you for your question.
Cheers, guys.
You're welcome, man.
Take care.
We've got Greg here. Greg, how are you?
Hi. Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me on. I'm an FA coach, level one. Yeah, about 4 years now. And when I'd done it, I had no coaching experience, but I played amateur football, semi-pro, and we played a lot of football. But what I got from it was that they weren't interested in your level of football, or you know, whatever level you're from. They just wanted you to just coach. So we played a lot of football. And some of the guys were saying, when are you going to stop playing football? And there's about five or six kept saying, when are you going to stop playing football? Are you going to coach or play football? What are you going to do? So that was the vibe I got from them. And I found it quite strange. But is football a teaching sport? I see it more talent comes through and the rest get left behind. And if you're a certain level of footballer, that will help you demonstrate if you want to teach. That's basically all I've got to say.
So, Greg, I'm not sure if there was a question in there or you just wanted to, I guess, have an input on the conversation.
Yeah, well, if I asked you, would you say coaching is a, football coaching is a teaching sport? Because from the FA coaching I got, they wasn't giving me that.
Yeah, I mean, well, for me, like I said, you know, I touched on it earlier in the conversation. I think the coach education pathway has come a long way over the last few years. It definitely is much more on a holistic approach. And I think one of the kind of, trade-offs for the current pathway in the way that it is that element of technical information or technical understanding that most coaches coming through the pathway now may or may not have. I think whereas previously, you know, we'd go on a course, and I'm sure Jacques and Apple have been very similar to my experiences with this, we'd go on a FA level, maybe not a level one per se, but maybe a level two in a UEFA B. We'd go up to, you know, we'd go on our course, and you know, it would basically be a very tutor-led, tutor-centered environment, and it was almost like, right, here's 20 practices that we do at level two, here's 20 practices that we do at UEFA B. Here's how the session looks. This is the information that we expect to be covered. Right, day, you know, you've got your final assessment day, right? Jacques, you've got this. Apple, you've got this. and yes, you've got this, and this is exactly how we want it done. And you pretty much, you know, we're left to your, I won't even say you're left to your own devices, but you're pretty much expected to deliver what you saw the tutor deliver. And if you were given a topic that you felt comfortable with, fantastic. If not, then you kind of had to do a bit of extra work and really understand the session a little bit more. But what you did get is very, very, very much so is a real big base or large base of technical knowledge or technical detail just kind of chucked at you, if you like, which I believe a lot of the courses nowadays, in my opinion, lack massively. I understand why. I think there's benefits to it, but I think there's also a lot of drawbacks. One of the benefits is for me is that if a coach is serious about wanting to get that information, they're going to have to go out there and actually understand the game a little bit better. The drawback is for those coaches who are not there for that reason, coaches who are just on certain courses because they need it for their job, there's not that same motivation to understand the game in the same way. Thus, the lack of technical detail kind of follows. And then you get situations where you've got coaches working in elite environments with players who are making, you know, sometimes what is just a technical error but not able to correct it because they've got no idea how to correct it. Or, and it's not to say there's a one-size-fits-all approach, but this is the other pathway that, you know, the other benefit I'd say of the pathway now is that whereas before we'd probably consider some general principles around what technical information should be considered in each given action or moment, if you like, now it's a lot more gone down the path of, right, well, what would you coach here and why would you coach it? There's still an opinion, but there's still a general consensus at the same time to an extent. I can speak, you know, from my personal experiences. I know going back a few years where I had one kind of real epiphany, if you like. I think it must have been about 2016, 2015 even. I was working with a set of goalkeepers at the time, actually. And, you know, I had a clear idea in my head of how I wanted it done. And this is probably very much influenced by the coach education pathway that I'd been down. And just to kind of paint a bit more of a picture, I've worked with six goalkeepers, from like four different countries. And, you know, my instinct was just telling me, Dad, there's something not right here. Something's not right here because they weren't doing it the way I wanted it done or the way I'd perceived to have it done. But then I had to kind of take a step back for a second and just look at what was going on. Are they getting success? Yeah, they are. So if they're getting success, what's wrong with it? Well, actually nothing, but what can I learn from that? Well, what it forced me to do, if you like, was take a step back, look at what was going on and assess, right, what's working for this player here, what's working for that player here, and so on and so forth. Because actually, they've got different strategies and ways of implementing a technique, if you like. But it's probably a very legitimate reason as to why as well. So you might have different characteristics. One might be smaller, one might be taller, one might be faster, one might be slower, one might have a higher jump, one might have a lower jump, or whatever that might be. And based on those characteristics, you start to identify where some of the tweaks might come with the technique itself. And that actually then helped me in the long run, because I then started looking at, right, I've gone from having one technique, which I was very headstrong on delivering to everyone, to now having five that I could deliver to a range of different people. So where I had goalkeepers or players in the past that I was trying to coach them in a certain way and it wasn't quite working for them, and it could become easily frustrating for me as a younger coach, thinking, well, this person's not getting it, so they got no chance. Actually, what that taught me is I had to change my approach. There's different ways of doing it. There's many ways to skin that cat, and working with those goalkeepers on that day really taught me that. So I started taking a bit more of a back step and really assessing every bit of everyone's technique and identifying what's working for them, what's not working for them, what are some of the consistent factors that, regardless of the position or regardless of the variables of the individual themselves, that are consistent. So then you can kind of rely on those as go-to principles, if you like. And then all the other bits are the little things that you can kind of tweak and polish up for anyone that might need it. Bit of a ramble there, but hopefully that helps a little bit. I don't know if Jacques and App's got anything to add to that.
You're right. I think there's the going on my level one back in the day. It got me back into playing football with friends at 11 aside, because you do play a lot of the time, and it's up to you what pieces of information you take. I was definitely on a course that Yas described. Yas described your way for be down to a T.
You know, here's the book, here's the practices, here's us showing you the practices, catch what you can, and that leaves you as a candidate as kind of like one or two. You want to play, so you're in every practice possible delivered by the tutors and you know, fellow candidates, or you're on the side taking notes, because you either, oh, actually, here's all the detail is because there's tutors on the side talking about the practice, not comfortable with playing or injured, you know, got that occasional injury just before the course happened. So it's like, that was my UEFA B, and it's what you take from it. The level one is completely different, and my interpretation, once I went did an affiliate tutor for the FA, that, you know, level one is all about making a safe environment for young people or people to play football. Is the environment safe? And then you just, you know, you have your little add-ons. Well, here's a game that you can play, and it actually develops this. Here's another, you know, here's I think we had a conversation the other evening, like drill versus practice. And it's, the onus is on you as an individual to, you know, develop. And they kind of tee you up, and it's up to you whether you're going to stick it in the top bins or not. And I don't know if that's the appropriate way to do it, if they want to make a dramatic change in developing young players. But it all depends on what they want from it. Is it a safe environment whilst playing football? 100%, that should be like the first thing that we all consider. But then they put stipulations on what jobs you can go for with the qualifications that they deliver. So that's the next step that I think needs to evolve. Great question, because I think, I can only remember playing, Alamo, I remember, back in the day, Diamond finishing. So exactly the same experience for me, Greg. Yeah, long time ago though. Thanks for reminding me.
How long ago did you do your level one?
I did my level one when I was, great question, 20, so 12 years.
Yeah, slightly different now. Never told us about any job opportunities, and you do a lot of drills. Slightly different now, I think.
I don't know. I delivered level ones just shy of 2.5 years ago. And it was a lot more about the experiences of the individual. But I got told I spoke too much about the detail, and spent a lot of time with learners and what they thought different things should be and how it is in their environment and the different pictures that they play. So I got told to, you got 4 days to deliver the course over 2 weekends. So that was interesting feedback from them, to be fair.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Don't know if you've got anything to add to that, Apps.
No, nothing at all. I think you guys hit the nail on the head there.
Awesome. Well, look, Greg, hopefully, you know, that answered your query or, you know, kind of satisfied your thoughts there. Just conscious of time now, guys. You know, we look to kind of wrap up now. Just a quick last one for everyone. You know, shout out to all the women out there that are mothers. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. Happy Mother's Day to you and you, Jack, and you, Apple. You know, you look great today, guys. Just on a final note, guys, you know, you were listening to a live edition of the Coaches Network podcast. It's the return of the sit down series. Revamped. Hit the little greenhouse at the top there. Follow the Coaches Network Club. Click on my profile, Jacques' profile, Apple's profile there. Hit that follow button. Hit the little bell next to their name as well, so you can be aware of any conversations we're having in the future. Head over to Twitter. Use the hashtag the Coaches Network Podcast or the Coaches Network. And then, you know, hit the Coaches Network on whichever platform you listen to your audio podcast on. Listen to some great conversations over the last few months. And certainly more to come over the next few months and time beyond that. Guys, thank you again for being with us this evening. Jack Apple, do you want to just let the listeners know where they can potentially get in touch with you if they have anything they want to kind of pick up with you later on?
I'm on Twitter. Do find me on my Twitter name, Coach Westcott, on Twitter. Otherwise, you can hit me up on here as well. That's it. I'm quite distinctive. I think I'm the only 6'3" black guy called Apple in the country. So yeah, you'll find me somewhere.
Awesome, Jack.
Likewise, do you know what? I think anything coaching now for me is Twitter or LinkedIn. May I introduce hybrid to those that are in the room? Yes.
Go for it, man.
Bless. So I host a hybrid hour and a hybrid level, discussing all different elements of what makes a hybrid in everyday life. Someone that can spin multiple plates, take small steps towards whatever they're trying to achieve. That's Monday, Tuesday and Friday mornings from 6:15 to 7:15. That's the hybrid hour. And then the hybrid level is Monday and Friday evenings, 8:15 to 9:45. So jump in. I know there's a few in the audience. We talk all sorts of things. Why we do not action stuff and why we do action stuff. And we look to make it happen. So you can find me on here then. Follow my name, and then you can find my group down the bottom. The club down the bottom, the Hybrid Media. So nice one, Yas. Great chat, mate.
Awesome, guys. Just on a final note, my name's Coach Yas. For anyone that doesn't know, feel free to click on my profile. You can follow me on Twitter at the Coaches Net or on Instagram at the Coaches Network. Get in touch. Let us know your thoughts on tonight's discussion. We should be back with you guys every Sunday evening. So keep an eye on the social media for the latest updates. And then throughout the week, we've got some upcoming conversations as well. Guys, it's been a pleasure this evening. Great conversation. Thank you for everyone that's been involved. Until next time, guys, take care.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at the Coaches Network or on Twitter at the Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.